Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome back to episode 171 of The Lookout. I am Meals. I'm here with LJ. What is up, my man?
Nothing much, you know? Another beautiful day in the neighborhood. The birds are chirping. The dogs are barking. The sun is shining.
It's amazing.
So I could see some green outside my window, which is always nice.
I want to ask you a question.
All right.
I think you'll know the answer to. Do you know what today is?
Oh, it's our anniversary. Hey.
We're here with it. Listen, man. Six years.
Six of them things.
6 years of The Lookout, my people. Shout out to everyone who's been a day one listener. We need to figure
out. I was a day one listener. And look at me now.
I appreciate that. You have no idea how much I appreciate that. It's been sick. I remember it. I don't know why I have to always like. Oh, Bam made a 3-pointer to win the game.
Wow, look at you. Look at the 6-year anniversary.
Look at the 6-year. Come on now.
Let's go. I'm happy for you.
Listen, man, I remember fucking coming up with the idea for this, recording it all throughout the month of February while I was also doing fucking two belts. And
you're doing a show at the time too, right?
I was doing a show at the time too. Like, so a show had just started a couple months beforehand. Two belts was already like, we were already about like 3 years in. So I was recording it between those. This is when I was like, all I do is work and all I do is record podcasts. And I occasionally have a girlfriend that I talk to. But times have changed.
Times have definitely changed. 6 years.
6 years.
We're wiser. There's more anime being watched.
Easily.
More fun things happening.
I feel like we've watched the rise of anime, and we've documented it through this podcast. Rise of anime, rise of manga, rise of everything.
Yeah, definitely. I think like within the last 6 years, there has definitely been this surge of popularity. And I don't even want to just say popularity, like, oh, now everybody's watching it, but like real influence.
Absolutely. Like
real influence of anime culture, and it's been great to be, you know, a part of something that I feel, in no bias at all, but like truly feel that The Lookout has been a pushing factor of just like really getting people into it, really getting like building a community around it, really being
talking about it, you know?
Yeah, just like creating conversations. And you know, the people that have been on this show, the amazing guests that we've been able to get on this show.
Low key every time. Like every year around this time, I wanna flex and like pretty much put out the guest list of people that we have on this show. But then I'm like, it's mad work to go back and figure out who's on the show and all the other people. But we've had a ton of guests. We haven't had much recently, only because like we record at very weird times. But I feel like we need to get back in our guest bag. That's what I feel like we need to do. Even though it's like the guests that we want don't always want us. But we need to get back in our guest bag because it's great to share and have this community and have these conversations and continue to like, oh, people, oh my God, there's a anime podcast with like black people hosting it. That's crazy. So I want to continue to do that for year six, but either that, I'm just glad that we've gotten this far. 6 years is nothing. 6 years, I feel like consistency with podcasts, very unparalleled. My first podcast didn't last 6 years. So here we are. You know what I'm saying? This lasted longer. This is actually 171 is actually the last episode of Two Belts.
Really? Damn.
Last official episode of Two Belts. So we're about to starting next week with the finale of our Full Metal Alchemist rundown. This will officially be the second longest podcast that I've ever done.
Wow. That's amazing. Look at us.
No,
look at us.
Look at us. Who would have thought? You're nothing to shake with too. You got 100 plus episodes of Big Eyes as yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. What, we stopped at 154, I think.
One of them. So it's great. It's amazing. Shout out to everyone for listening. If you want to continue to share, you want to celebrate with us, please wish us happy things on the timeline. Please, if you have any, great memories of us on this podcast, please share it with us. Doing this for 6 years means it's been 6 years since the end of Dragon Ball Super. So, and this entire podcast has just been waiting for it to return. But hey, you know what? We got other anime to talk about. It's a beautiful thing when we have other anime that we can speak of in this instance.
Absolutely. And also too, we'll have something special to really celebrate 6 years as soon as we wrap up Full Metal.
We wrap it up next week, so who knows?
Wrap it up next week. So we got something coming up the pipeline to really celebrate for 6 years.
I would like to say this is completely unprovoked. Is completely out of nowhere, but I would just like to say personally, My Hero Academia is one of the best anime stories that's ever been written. And I, if you read this week's chapter, if you're a manga fan, I'm not gonna spoil it for you, but if you read this week's chapter, you know how good this is. And you'll know, I have so many thoughts. I could talk about it for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, but I'm not going to. But I would just like to say it's one of the best anime stories ever written, and I feel like by the end of the year, people are going to accept that as well.
Will you cry when it ends?
I might. I feel like that's what they're trying to go for, right? Like, I feel like that's what they're... I don't know if you've... I mean, so the anime starts back up. I mean, the little recap episodes start back up in a couple weeks, and then the anime proper starts up back in 2 months. But I feel like that's what they're going for. I can't say I haven't been close to doing that, watching the show a couple times. So I feel like that's what they're trying to... They're really trying to pull, jerk the tears out of your eyes with this ending. So, hey. I just had to say that. I just had to get it off my chest. I feel like people are going to disagree, but at this point, when the story ends, no one will be able to disagree.
No, No, this last chapter was really emotional.
It's really...
It tugs at the heartstrings, don't it?
It does the damn thing.
Yeah. No, I can't... I've definitely been a tough critic on My Hero. Most people have. Listen, it's been around long enough. It's hit the it's now become the villain. But I think we're talking strictly manga wise. I can't truly disagree with your statement. It's definitely up there in terms of one of the best ever put to paper. I think what makes My Hero, I think what makes My Hero special is the fact that it takes kind of things, and especially when it started, it took a lot of things that are very popular at the time. Obviously superheroes, they're having this moment, Marvel, DC, and it brings it to this manga anime format, but it makes itself feel so much different from everything else. And I think it kind of dives deep into a lot of things that, that a lot of, Western superhero, films and stuff don't really dive into, some of the things that they talk about, especially when it comes to, superhero society and like how actually superheroes are viewed and this and that. Like some of them touch on it, but like how deep like My Hero gets into it. It's really a special manga. Like I feel it's gonna be definitely a big void when it's done.
I agree. The only reason I say that is because of how true it has remained to its mission. And it hasn't really averted from its mission, even with people feeling like it should. But it stayed very close to like, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing it, and this is a story that we wanted to tell.
Definitely. I think we're talking starter mangas. This might be number one. If I'm like, you know what, if you really want to get into manga, you should read My Hero.
I agree. How about that? Okay. Let's get into, is there anything you want to talk about before we get
into that? Any news? Any news that happened this week? I've been kind of offline a little bit, so
to be honest with you, no. Toonami aired a Dragon Ball Z Kai marathon at 2 in the morning, so.
Yeah. Yeah, 2 to 6. Two to six in the morning. That's great.
Like, goddamn, you can't even get the normal hours. You can do a 4 to 6. What the hell are they airing on Cartoon Network?
Yeah, I was surprised that Cartoon Network didn't do anything. They didn't do any of the. They didn't at least do like Cartoon Network shows that had the Dragon Ball Z references in them or some type of.
I feel like it should. Considering how big Dragon Ball Z was for Cartoon Network, I feel like it could have been worth something in the middle of the day or throughout the day. Like you guys are literally airing nothing. Who cares? It's one day.
We could have stopped Craig of the Creek for one day.
We could have. Teen Titans, one day.
One day. One day. We didn't need Gumball for one day. It'll be all right.
Amen. It is what it is. We got a lot of spring anime coming up. I started watching Solo Leveling.
How are you enjoying it?
I don't know if I like the main character, but I like the premise of the show, so I'm pretty sold on it.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't fully tapped back in yet. Ninja Conway has definitely taken over.
That's next for me.
It's so good.
Okay. All right, true. Shit.
I'll say this, like Adult Swim Jason DeMarco, what he's done over there at Adult Swim in terms of like them really starting to produce and push out their own anime, next fucking level. Like they've got, and they still got things in the docket that are still coming this year. They have a really big, like Toonami and Adult Swim have a really big year in anime this year. And I'm really excited for the other things that are coming. Obviously, they have the Lazarus that's coming, and that's the one with the producer, director from Cowboy Bebop. They got some Junji Ito stuff that's coming. So, yeah, Adult Swim is really setting themselves up for a really big year anime-wise, and Ninja Conway is just like, it's like the tip of the iceberg. They had some other good stuff that came out last year. But yeah, they're locked in. They're locked in for the next couple years, to be honest.
I appreciate that. That sounds good. I need to start Ninja Conway. I'm going to start it soon, because everyone's been telling me about it. I was like, okay, I'll watch Solo Leveling since there's more episodes of that. So, gonna watch Ninja Conway run. I think they got 5 episodes of it thus far, maybe 6 at this point. But we're gonna tap in. Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood Part 5 of our review, our penultimate episode of this review. Arguably the best stretch of episodes in the show thus far.
Absolutely.
You know what? I'm not even going to say argue. It's the best stretch of episodes in this series thus far.
Absolutely. Also, okay, before we get into this.
Okay.
Do you watch the entire episode, like, to the point of, like, the preview of the next episode?
Yeah, if I'm too lazy to put it down, I'll just be like, all right, I'll watch it. Because there's some stuff that happens after the credits.
Yeah. Usually, like, sometimes there is. Okay, so can we talk about how the preview for their next episodes, the narrator is the funniest shit in the world, because he doesn't give you or tell you anything or hints about what's happening next episode. He just gives like a random like poem of life and then just says the title of the next episode, and it's so fucking amazing to me.
It's a fiery chance that you'll have
it's like
to make history for one name envy.
It's like
Beyond the Inferno up next.
It's just like olive oil and vinegar do not mix unless you whisk vigorously and make a vinaigrette. The sins of the father next episode.
Or spoken fire. Bruh. No, I mean, it's a very... What I'll say about this, and I wanted to talk about this next episode, but I'll say one of the only reasons why I continue to say that this isn't better than AOT is because I feel like this came out at a time that it shouldn't have come out in. If it comes out, I'll wait till the police decide to stop. This 6 years, huh?
Yeah. Hey, listen, they know. This is our theme music.
Either way, I feel like this came out at a this series came out at an interesting time, because I feel like we were still in the, I would say most things from like 2003 to maybe like 2013, 14. I think anime is still kind of like its own shit that's tucked away in a corner. So when this series comes out, it's not as, while it's well received by those who watch it, I don't think there's a lot of people who've watched it. not as much as AOT, and it hasn't been as dramatic as AOT, and not as episodic as AOT. Even though I do think this is a really, really great story. But I think this one thing that hinders, I guess, its lasting impact, because it'll always have the lasting impact with anime fans, is that it came out during a time where not a lot of people had access to anime.
So, I mean, it was like, you know, when it came out back when Toonami is just coming back. So it was like one of the newer ones that was on that on that block. I think what hinders it a little bit too is the fact that it's a remake. So it's one of those things of like, if you had seen the original Full Metal Alchemist and then they come back, oh, we're doing Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, you know, I'm sure some people are just like, well, I already watched Full Metal Alchemist, like, why am I gonna watch a remake or a revamp of whatever?
I'll watch this, even if they did. Listen, I'm not against remakes.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And I think though the thing is too is that AOT came out around the same time, but AOT isn't a remake. It's this original story. It feels fresher. It feels more, like you said, it feels more like grandiose. It feels bigger.
Yeah. Also, it has, it's like separated into seasons, right? Like, this is one long story that occurred concurrently, whereas AOT is like, they had the benefit of seasons, and I know we would love to have AOT like continue throughout the story, but the benefits of seasons is people are able to go back and watch it. People are able to say like, okay, people are able to kind of like break it up and understand the story a little bit more in reference to where the season ends. We know what happens in season one. We know what happens in season two. We know what happens in season three. But people aren't necessarily off the top of your head is going to tell you what happened in episode 34 of the Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. There's a lot of story that is being told throughout this that it's just like, it's not easy to kind of reference and tell the story. I know this technically it does have seasons, kind of, but in the way it's broken up on Crunchyroll, it definitely doesn't have seasons.
Nor any
real defined arcs, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it, like you said, it's one long continuous story that has really good breaking points, but I can't tell you if there's a definitive arc. Like, everything feels very cohesive. I do agree. And I agree with that. I think having seasons or having these like definitive, okay, here is this this arc, this saga, this storyline that we're all, that we're trying to figure out. Here's this kind of like one mission for this season that we're trying to accomplish. And once you accomplish it, you can go to the next season. Like this one, it feels like the entire thing is the mission. You're just along for this long journey. Now, as an anime fan and watcher, I enjoy this format. I think this format is great. I enjoy the even number of episodes that it is. I think it's just the perfect length of episodes. It just tells a great story. But I can, once again, go back and understand what you're saying of it is hard to just be like, I want to watch this moment. You know, I want to watch this arc again because it's not really a moment where you're like, okay, I can watch that arc again. It is one of those things where it's like, if you're going to watch Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood again, you got to watch Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. From the beginning,
you really do. Watch the whole thing. Like, that's why, I mean, it's the struggle to find guests, right? Is to say that, hey, can you watch these episodes in the middle of the show without watching the beginning, middle, or end of it? You know what I'm saying? Can you watch this stretch of episodes from episode 20 through 30 without really watching the first 20 episodes? Like, it's hard to get a guest to be able to do that. But if they had been broken off in arcs, I think people have a way better reference of like, oh yeah, this happened in the first arc and this happened. So you can kind of figure out through that. But kind of like, moving on with the story. All right, so kind of like we kicking off on episode about 40, is it 44 here? What have we learned thus far in the show in the first 43 episodes? We have learned to kind of like set the stage for like where everything is going because we're in the end game of this. We have learned that the state police force, state alchemists are actually homunculi for the most part. People running the entire state of Amestris is homunculi. We've learned that Amestris itself was created just to create this giant transmutation circle. We've learned that the wars at every point in this transmutation circle have happened in order to spread blood, kill people in order to utilize them for philosopher's stones. We have learned that they do not want you to know any of this stuff.
Yes. And will kill.
Will kill you if you learn any of this stuff.
Yes.
But the biggest thing that we've learned, I mean, in the last episode, we kind of capped this off, is that this immortal army of soldiers is ready to go at any time. They're powered by Philosopher's Stones. They can be implemented to pretty much kill off anyone that you kind of can to utilize them for the purposes of this. The big day where the giant transmutational circle is supposed to happen, which is called the Promised Day. Few things. So I want to separate this into everything before the Promised Day and everything after the Promised Day. Because in this stretch of episodes, we get some preparation, you get a little time skip, you get some battles. This is probably the most action-packed this entire stretch of episodes have ever been. We get everything.
Yeah, you get some emotional moments. You get some father-son moments.
We get father-son. Well, we get a lot of father-son moments. We start off with essentially Al and his dad, Hohenheim, kind of like trying to figure things out and try to figure out a plan to defeat father. And then we also get Ling, who is Greed, kicking in the door of the Fuhrer's house, attacking him viciously. Great animation on this attack, by the way. I was like, oh my
God. Oh, it was amazing.
They stepped it up here. It was like, you really felt like you was in someone's home trying to murder them. He's trying to, learn much more about his own thing and stuff like that. I love the back and forth between that kind of like battle. Eventually, he uses his, what do they call it? The ultimate something? Ultimate shield?
Yes.
And that's how he's able to escape. I mean, you run in the door, you get run up, you get done up, and you have to escape. Good on the Fuhrer? I don't know what to say.
Yeah, first of all, running in on somebody in the middle of dinner is crazy. Was it a dinner or just like, or just family time?
Family I'll just say time, that. Yeah.
In the middle Mother's of family
there.
Time.
Mother's there.
He was just like, fuck it, I don't care.
Badass kid is there.
And everybody I love the there. Fact that in the midst of all this, the, you know, Mrs. Bradley is just, she's just like blind to it all. She doesn't know what's going on. Nah. She doesn't know that her husband is a...
She's a beard.
She doesn't know that her husband and fake son are both really horrible people and done horrible things. She doesn't know why this man is in there trying to kill her very horrible husband.
I would imagine she was like, oh, people have tried to kill my husband before. I get it.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, I get it, bro. But never in my house.
No.
She's like, man, I just bought those drapes.
Hey, listen, it is what it is.
He didn't even take his shoes off at the front door, just mud tracking all on the rug.
Well, this wouldn't be the only kind of like familial fight that we got here, because as we kick off the next episode, we see that Olivier Armstrong, my favorite character in the show, maintains to be my favorite character throughout this entire stretch of episodes. I'm not even mad at her. I feel like she's the one who's just like, listen, y'all pussies get in order. Figure this out. Even when she's being attacked, even when she is the enemy, she's able to have a commanding presence over these officers who don't really know what they're doing and say, like, listen, you either with us or you're going to die. Like, because, come on, I'm commander for a reason. But Olivia Armstrong, she does something incredibly nice. Even though she's disguising it as something else, she essentially visits the family, her Armstrong family mansion, and demands that they transfer the head of the family ship to her. And they're like, oh, don't you want it with your brother? And she's like, my brother's a punk. He could never run this. So she fights her brother, Alex Armstrong, and eventually does beat his ass enough to become the leader of the family. And she sends her family off on a vacation in Shing, which is essentially like, y'all need to get out of here because some shit is about to go down. I learned some stuff. I don't know what's going on here. There are immortal soldiers going around. There are kids who are homunculi. There's a whole other world that is happening right now. And the last thing I want is my family killed. So she does something incredibly nice in this instance. And I think it's recognized a little bit by Alex himself. May arrives in the mine.
Alex gets to redeem himself, though. Let's make this clear.
No, he definitely.
The OG All Might.
Not quite All Might, but he's there. But he's the
All Might prototype.
Absolutely, he definitely redeems himself in this next batch of episodes. We also see that May arrives in the mining town of Yuzwell with Envy in a jar, and as she's about to head back to Xing, Envy is like pretty much like, you don't want to just drop off like a half-eaten homunculi, like a half-living homunculi. You want to learn what immortality is, you better head back to Central. And she's, you know, she's taken back by it. She's like, you know what? You're kind of right. And Envy's like, excellent. You know what I'm saying? Very like, I got her. In this.
Yeah. I don't know how she got duped that much.
Cause she's a fucking 6-year-old kid.
Yeah, that's true.
She's a kid.
That's one thing I do like about this show is that although like, you know, these our kids, you know, there's kids characters. I mean, Ed and Al are children.
Right.
I don't want to say they're children, but they're young. They're like 14. I don't like calling 14-year-olds kids.
Okay.
They're teenagers, though.
Fair.
You know, they're teenagers. And although they're going through all of this, this whole war and all these, you know, these very serious things, they still handle it like teenagers emotionally, especially when it comes to like, oh, killing and all these things and just how naive they are to like the realities of war. They kind of feel like, you know, they have this youthful optimism to them, and you know, they even bring it up like the moment between Kimberly and Al, that's like one of my favorites of this entire series, but mostly this stretch of episodes of where mm-hmm. he kind of talks to him about like, you feel that you can have everything, you know, you can save the world and get your bodies back and all these things. And Al just has this, you know, like once again, an answer that someone who hasn't been in war, seen in war, will have of just like, why do I have to choose? Like, why can't both good things happen?
Right.
You know? Like, why not? You know, and all these adults around them, they're so tainted by all the things they have seen and gone through where they don't even think of those possibilities anymore. It's really like they're so rigid now in their thinking. And I think like it just adds a nice contrast throughout this entire series to have some of these characters once again who aren't as tainted, who aren't as corrupted as these adults that are there now, and still have this optimistic view of like everything can work out and everything can be great. And I think it causes it creates a great balance in terms of like character and character profiles, because now they're able to have different conversations and you're able to have different moments of enlightenment of like, you know, shit, even Ed having to look at Mustang and be like, yo, like, this man is so tweaked out on revenge that he's, you know, that I can't even recognize who he is, you know, and you get right. these great moments, but you also get a moment of like where Ed's own pureness draws Mustang back of just being like, oh, like, I forgot. Like, while I'm he lost sight of the mission, and without Ed there, he wouldn't have been able to like refocus on like what the mission is.
Absolutely. Well said. There's so much things that kind of like just that elevate the story and all these little narratives and all these other things that are kind of like underlying that is helping really build this like fantastic. We're heading towards this moment. All these different stories are converging at this moment. And the last bit of the preparation for Promise Day is that Izumi Curtis eventually gets a message from Sig. Izumi gets herself arrested at Fort Briggs. And then after she gets herself arrested, so she can't be at her restaurant for when the soldiers come to essentially grab her. She informs Major Miles and Captain Buccaneer about the message that she got from Alphonse. The news eventually reaches Lieutenant General Grumman, who then discreetly passes it to Rebecca Catalina, who then goes on a date with her girlfriend Hawkeye, who then visits, Gene Havoc in the hospital. And Gene Havoc is in the hospital, but behind the curtain is none other than Roy Mustang himself. And then they all have their own little rendezvous towards the end of this thing. So, you know, it's, they ain't no texting, they ain't no Snapchat.
Oh yeah, no, this is real life. We are sending we're sitting pigeons with notes tied to the foot.
Mm-hmm.
Real, you know, real telegrams. Great stuff
here. So we fast forward a couple months. We get a little time skip. The last bit of time skip is that also Ed joins up with Greed and he creates a new gang with the guy who's a gorilla and the guy who's a lion. So they got a new, that's the squad.
What do you call that? What is their WWE faction name?
Shit. Alchemist Academy. I don't know what to say. either way.
Alchemist. You know what? There's been a little surgence of school themed factions and in WWE right now. I'll take it.
Hey man. Listen, we here. With that said, we fast forward a couple months. We get a little time skip. There's a lot of things that happen at the beginning of this time skip, like you know, Ed meeting back up with Rinri, but Al is also on his own in this kind of months. It's been a long time since they've actually all been together. But Lieutenant Grumman greets Major Miles, revealing that the Fuhrer has unexpectedly showed up to view their joint training exercises. So the Fuhrer is back in places where he shouldn't be in, taking advantage of moments that he probably has no business in, because he always has got to be around. Alphonse gets caught lacking huge.
Getting jumped in the train yard.
Why was he there by himself? That's my question. I know he's a giant suit of armor, but you can still get your ass whooped. Nonetheless, he's jumped by pride and gluttony. He awakens and he's confronted by both of them. He's unable to fight due to his unstable soul, and Alphonse is subdued by Pride's shadowy tentacles. Colonel Mustang visits Major General Armstrong to say that she will leave his mansion to him in the event of her death, which is crazy. Mustang secretly passes information about Celine Bradley's true identity. He's a homunculi. He does it in a very, like, cool. He's like, here's some flowers. I know you don't like flowers. I know you're a New York bitch who doesn't like flowers, but here you go.
Colonel Real Mustang. Player. I gained a lot of respect. I gained a lot of respect for Mustang throughout these episodes. I didn't know he had game like that.
Hey man.
I'm sorry.
He does a couple, you know, he does his thing.
Learned a little bit about his backstory, and I was like, oh, that's where he gets it from.
So they begin an assassination attempt on Bradley's car. It's blown up in the middle of a thing, which is kind of crazy. Imagine just a train car bomb. But also, who knows, man? They do shit in Demon Slayer all the time. Alphonse has a dream where he wakes up urging him not to die, yet transitioning from a boy's voice to a more sinister one. And then eventually the entire group meets up with Hohenheim. Ed hates his father. What do you feel about Ed and his relationship with his daddy? Doesn't really trust him because he kind of like left him.
Hey, but listen, also, man, I get it. As a person, he also had these same issues with his own dad.
Right. He's like, but also he's
he loves him.
Right. He's grown up and he realizing ultimately what he did, I think. I think he's hearing him and he's hearing these stories and he's hearing all these things that he went through and realizing, oh my God, I guess he had to do these kind of things and the burden that it is for him, but he also doesn't really forgive him. A lot of these people aren't really forgiving at this moment. Even like, I mean, everyone sees what's my man's name? Scar? They're like, who let this guy here? I'm not taking orders from you. And Scar is just like, relax. It's not even that deep anymore.
Like, he's like, chill, bro.
He's like, yeah. Ever since I killed Scar, the white girl's
man.
Parents,
Scar, I mean, I liked him when he first appeared on the scene, but like my real respect and real love for Scar has grown continuously throughout this series. Cause you see his growth too. Like you see him, like you really see him, you know, really reflect and really like even see the error in his own ways and be like, man, damn, maybe I was bugging just a little bit. Like
they spent 40 hours guilt tripping him by killing homegirl's parents.
Yeah, they did. They did definitely have. They definitely did tie him up and just sat there and point the finger at him. For
I can't believe you would kill her parents. And tried to help you.
Yeah, this Lord. Is your fault, and you did this. They did that for like an
but
hour.
But you know what? I forgive you. And it's like, oh, brother, here we go.
But no, I think going back to the Ed and his dad thing, though, I think it becomes a thing of, as you get older, and I think, you know, it becomes as realization too. So as you get older, you understand that sometimes your parents, especially your dad, does things that you may not understand as a child, and you may not just even understand their headspace or where they're at or what they're going through, but you really doesn't click until you're older and you really understand, like, damn, now I understand the position that you were in, and I understand right. what the hell you were trying to do, and I understand why you had to make those decisions and do that. I know Absolutely. That even though you made that decision, you weren't intentionally trying to hurt me. You know, it became a byproduct, but I understood where your heart and where your intention was. And it's cool to see Ed kind of go through that moment of, you know, these realizations of his own dad and what he was trying to do and what his goals were.
Absolutely. It's a part of the process, and everyone is kind of learning from it. So he goes through these things. Eventually, it leads to this giant encounter with Pride and Gluttony. And this is kind of the crux of the first batch of episodes, because it's this fight kind of like where you really see everyone for the first time kind of on the same page. I mean, you got Al, you got the people from Shing, you got the stragglers that came along, who's a lion and a damn monkey. You got Greed. You got everyone kind of like on the same page with this threat that's kind of like looming. Pride shows up possessing Al's hollow body, and he's trying to attack him. He's like, I'm Al. brother, won't you, you know, fight with me to the death? And Greed is like, that's not your brother. That's Pride. That's Pride right there. And they try to fend him off, and it leads to this whole kind of like struggle between them. What did you think of this fight? Just in general, and how it was kind of like happened, how it was wrapped up, how all the players kind of came involved. Like, what are your thoughts on it?
One thing I like about the fights and the battles in Full Metal is that you have to use the pieces that you're dealt with. There is no always some bigger, higher power that's going to come and help you. There's not always some type of, you know, sometimes you're outmatched and sometimes, but you still have pieces and you still have to fight in how you use them. Like, even in this moment where they're like, fuck, like, all right, Pride is obviously strong as hell. Like, how can we fight? Okay, we got these two Chimeras and we got Greed. Let me hit the lights so he can't cast any shadows. Let me send one of the Chimeras at him because he got the animal powers and he can sniff them out. And then, you know, then when Gluttony comes in, you're like, all right, like, Fawn comes back, and then, you know, Greed has to yield to Ling so Ling can use his chi. Like, it's really cool how they're able to just, like I said, they use the pieces they have around them. They're like, fuck it, we gotta make it work. How the fuck are we gonna make it work? It's such a great fight. It's so fun. It's so fast-paced and action-packed. There's even some, you know, there's some surprise turns, like fucking Pride eating Gluttony, and you're like, the irony and all of that.
Yeah, I was like, yo, that's kind of nuts. Like, because I guess they had their back against the wall with kind of like them, everyone using their brain for a fucking change. And they had their back against the wall. We saw the return of Lan Fan, who has her new, you know, her new arm, her new automail.
Oh yeah, she definitely tried to jump back in the game too early, but
Audemars on the automail, you feel me?
Audemars to the automail.
You know what I'm saying? But she showed up back in the battle, which has been great. You also see this continuing tugging thing between Greed and Ling, and like when it's best to use Ling in this instance and when it's best to use Greed, which will come into a big play, you know, later on in the story. But I love this fight because, again, like I said, you really get to see all the players kind of get involved with one another and realize like how strong they can be together as opposed to apart. And it was no bigger than Celine Bradley. Let's talk about Celine Bradley for a moment. I want to ask you this question.
I'd kick him so fucking hard.
I want to ask you, speaking of that, I want to ask you, what's your Mount Rushmore of badass kids?
Mount Rushmore of badass kids?
Yes.
In anime or just in general?
I'm struggling to see if it's an anime because anime doesn't really do too many kid things.
Let me see. Let me look up anime kid villains.
There's Kid Buu, easily.
There's Kid Buu for sure.
Kid Buu's a menace. Whether he's actually a kid or not is unconfirmed, but his name is Kid Buu, so I'm going to take that. There's Celine Bradley,
who's also a menace. Yeah, Celine, yep. You watch Black Lagoon, right?
I've not watched Black Lagoon.
Oh, I was gonna say Hansel and Gretel in Black Lagoon. We gonna count Rui from Demon Slayer?
You know, yeah, let's count him. He was a badass kid.
Definitely a badass kid. Shit.
Let's see. What to say? Evil anime babies.
Noah from Yu-Gi-Oh?
Noah from Yu-Gi-Oh was a terrible little punk-ass asshole. So I agree. They also had Cell, which is funny. Because technically, yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I guess Cell's a child.
Yeah, Cell is definitely a child. The fact that Cell is here is crazy.
10 youngest anime villains of
all time. Let's talk about outside of anime. How about outside of anime?
Okay, damn. Badass kids.
Tariq from Power.
Yes, Tariq's from Power for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You gotta be on there. Man, there's like Bebe Kids. I mean, we got Kids.
Angelica from Rugrats.
Angelica from Rugrats, for sure.
Yo.
Okay, I wouldn't. It's not evil, but in Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans, their whole faction is just made up of, like, war children. They're not bad, per se, because they are fighting for their freedom, but, sure. You know, they're kids, and one's in a giant robot mercilessly killing adults, so I was still
bad.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of badass, but... How are we counting the Chimera Ants from Hunter x Hunter?
It's been a while since I watched Hunter x Hunter. I guess you can count.
Because they said that Yupi was only 46 days old, so...
Technically a kid. I mean, technically what standard, kid. Though? I don't know. Yeah, let's count them. Let's count them. Kid. He's a badass kid. What else?
What the hell? I'm missing Johan from Monster. He was legit causing mass murders as a child. Now he's an adult later in the series, but you figure out all the things he did as a kid. And
what about Kid Frieza from Dragon Ball Super Broly? It's just like monkeys.
Yes, that's any child going in and referring to people as monkeys the first time. I mean, he was feared as a child.
He was. Listen.
In other words, all we're saying is that parents be active parents so you do not raise badass kids.
Pretty much. Let's see. So from there on, I mean, the fight is amazing. It we see, like you said, Pride ends up eating Gluttony and taking on his powers of spelling, I guess, or eating. I don't know, but it isn't till we get to the plan that Home Nine and Al kind of put together to trap Pride using a massive transmutation that creates a giant dome of darkness, and because his weaknesses. Is darkness. He sits in there. They're trapped in there. And because Al is the only one who can survive without food, water, and anything really, he can sit in there and have them say, like, okay, y'all handle the Promise Day stuff. I'll just sit here with him. However, I'm fast forwarding to the next part of the fight with this dome, because just to keep it all dome, you know, all domed up. So, however, during this entire ordeal, it is Salim who is banging on Al's head, but he's banging on it in Morse code, and the lion guy, these people have names, shout out to them, you're a lion, I don't know.
Heinkel?
Heinkel, there we go. Heinkel and Darius. So, which Darius is not expect a black guy.
Darius is deaf. Darius gotta be, that's a very black name.
Ew, it's like Isaiah Hartenstein. Like, did you see my tweet about him? Do you know he's black? He's a part black, right?
Yeah. Well, remember when I sent you that text? I was like, that's his dad?
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah. And I was like, wow.
Yeah. His dad is half black. His mom is white. So he's about a fourth black. Shout out to him. Yeah.
Shout out to him. Hey,
still can't say it, but you know, shout out to you.
He can't say it?
No, he can't. It's bad. His name is Isaiah. That's as black as it's gonna get for him. But but either way, so he's banging on it.
Yeah, he can't say it. Yeah. You look at him. It's not
you're not even 50. You don't have any like strong features, you know what I'm saying? Like if you had some features, maybe, but yeah, whatever. Either way, he's banging on and realizing it's Morse code through this entire thing. Heinkel's like, yo, stop him from banging. And eventually, none other than Kimblee shows up. The murderous Kimblee shows up out of nowhere and gets to jump on Heinkel and frees Salim from this dome of darkness. And they're like, thank God, it took you forever to fucking come here. So now it's Heinkel and Alphonse against Kimblee and Selim, which should be a fucking, that's a banger of a battle. I mean, it is.
No, this one's good. This is a good fight.
It's like one of them random fights in Dragon Ball Super. Like, you remember the one that's like Goku and Hit versus the super fast guy and the super other guy?
Yeah.
But either way, it's a great battle. It got very anime-y in the middle of it. It got very like, I have the stone that I've been holding on to forever, but I can't use the stone. It's filled with human bodies. It's like, but you must use the stone. And it's the stone is the only way that we'll be able to ascend to the next level. So he gets the stone and then like fucking, there's like a power up beneath the clouds and all this other shit like that. And Al gets his legs back and he's able to like run it. You know, it's very anime power up, you know what I'm saying? And then he tosses he wings over the Philosopher's Stone to Heinkel, who also pulls up out of the blue after using his near-death experience and ends up biting Kimberly in the neck. I was like, damn, this is nuts.
And then, wait, then Dr. Yeah, he gets to the Dr. Marco. And
Dr. Marco is like, oh, come here.
Yeah, once again, you use the pieces that you have. That's what he did. He had his pieces. It was just like, fuck it. Hey, this is what we got to do. Heinkel came through with probably the kill of the century.
Yeah,
easy. I ain't never seen a lion hunt like that.
Heinkel's shit was nuts. It was kind of crazy. Yeah, they use a whole bunch of other things, and eventually they do. Heinkel sacrifices himself to save Al and the others, while Kimberly's body is absorbed by Pride, allowing him to survive. So that is on that. Let's get into Mustang side of things, because we haven't seen Mustang. We haven't talked about Mustang in a couple episodes, but Mustang is making moves. We talked about a lot of these moves, but one of the moves is going to Madame Christmas's bar to supply evidence that Selim Bradley has been, you know, existing for a long time and kind of getting a lot of the thing on the skinny on a lot of stuff. Madame Christmas was also his mom, which I didn't.
Yes. I'll tell you, it explains a lot. It explains why, you know, his pimping is the way it is.
I mean, yeah. She was like, what about all the girls that work for you? He's like, of course you would be worried about that. But don't worry.
Man, real romance, man, bro. Listen, we out here. Real romantics is still alive.
She just escapes into sewers. I have no idea if she lives, dies, or anything after that. She just like, I'll escape.
Hey, you know a woman like her gonna survive.
Of course.
She got too many resources and connects.
So,
Mustang. I think this is what Mustang Group is doing right here is probably my favorite part.
No, it is. They play up the music. They play up all the they play up all the cameos a lot. They play up all the, like, it's like watching. You love to see a plan come together, right? Especially this plan that you know has been happening for the last 20 episodes. The second Mustang stepped out of Fuhrer Bradley's office, and he was like, okay, I'm being, you know, surveillance. The plan never stopped. And it would just move in different ways. From him finding out that Selim Bradley is a homunculus to him exchanging notes and doing all these things and kind of like working underground to make sure that a lot of things happen. He did not stop working at any instance throughout this entire thing. And that's what's been great about his entire plan. We talked about how everyone connected to one another, but it's Mustang mission along with Hawkeye and other allies. They plan their next move against the government and strategize to take advantage of the chaos caused by the train accident involving the Fuhrer. Father discusses Mustang's actions with his subordinates, recognizing the threat he poses. And Major General Armstrong suggests kidnapping Mrs. Bradley, but Father dismisses the idea, considering her useless as a hostage. So he played himself. Because Mustang is the one who kidnapped Mrs. Bradley. There's a whole plan. The whole plan to kidnap this old lady. They essentially,
it all works out. Like, man, Mustang, that's a tactician right there. You got to put him up with the greats. You got to put him up there with the greats in terms when it comes to leading the team.
Kidnap your ops wife.
Your ops wife. So you can make yourself look like the hero. You bring her to the public radio station.
Not only that, you have to. Not only that, he essentially proved to her that her husband doesn't give a damn about her, because They can
real dirty Mackin too. Oh my god! Hey, Mustang is rising up my ranks, man. He really. I have a hard time figuring out who my favorite character is in this series because I love them all so much. Mm-hmm. But Mustang really might have to. He might be my number one.
He's the tactician that he is, the plan that he is. I mean, he brings them up to kind of like the hideaway house where all the soldiers eventually meet them, and they're like, you know, that one black sergeant is like, "We don't care who we kill, just don't kill Armstrong. Kill an old lady. You mean kill Mrs. Bradley? Kill that bitch too." And so they're like, "We've
been thought he was mad black and bald." Is hilarious. Yeah,
it's just he's that like one General Black from fucking Dragon Ball. It's just like that one black guy who's in charge. Who's just like, "I don't give a damn." it is what it is, but. We get to the point. It's the ambush. They realize everyone's lives is at stake, and then you see the allies that they've created along the way, and that begins the kind of like momentum of these feel good moments right here, because Mustang, the standoff, the officers that they're surrounded by, the central soldiers prepare to attack Colonel Mustang's squad. They are unexpectedly saved by members of Mustang team who emerge with sidearms drawn. Mrs. Bradley questions her loyalty to her husband as she realizes she was almost shot. Mustang promises to keep her safe. Of course he does. Very player. And Mustang squad beats hastily to... I'm reading I'll tell you what I did afterwards to summarize this entire thing, because there's a lot that's going on. I had to use some technology. They are supplied by weapons and ammunition by Second Lieutenant Rebecca Catalina and Second Lieutenant Maria Ross, organized by Gene Havoc, who comes up in an ice cream truck?
Yeah, they put up in an ice cream truck. That was one of the best.
Where's the reinforcements? They're like, "We don't know. They're supposed to be here. You think they got caught? I don't know." And as they're about to get like completely flambéed, the ice cream truck pulls up and kick open the door, and it's Rebecca, and she's like, "I'm here with all this, you know," and she kicks open this like guns and ammunition and tear gas.
Second Lieutenant Ross reporting for duty.
I know. It's like, "Sir, get back." This was lit. This entire episode was pretty lit. Like, I love chaos in this kind of way.
It's the best part. The best part is, who gave you all these weapons? You'll talk to him soon. Hello, who is this? This is Colonel Mustang. Who supplied these weapons? It's me, Gene Havoc. It's like, right. It felt so... Havoc?
Havoc? That's my favorite part.
It's like,
you what dog. The... You dirty you dog. Yeah. And he's that's like, Gene Havoc's in like his wheelchair, and he's like, "They may have got me down, but I'm not out." You know what I'm saying? And he's
like, "Yeah, listen, he was like, hey, I can still make maneuvers.
Who do I send the bill to? The office of the Fuhrer." Like, I was like, "All right, y'all in your bag. Y'all hype."
Hey, wait, not even just that. So it's the officer of the Fuhrer and start a new tab. Man, what? Oh my gosh, this should have me ready to sign up for the army. I was like, fuck it. I was like, I'm about to be a military man.
Yeah, the brick soldiers eventually show up, led by Captain Buccaneer and the hidden Armstrong family mansion, and they launch an attack on Central. They overwhelm Central's forces. Olivier Armstrong also takes drastic action in Central Command, killing a general and taking another hostage to stop Central's plot. She challenges other generals' motives and actions. I love her because she essentially calls out. She's like, "Y'all could not. If y'all kill me, it's not even going to do anything. Like, my men are, they would just be like, I can't believe she was a punk and went out wild, crazy like that." Like, she was just like, she was essentially punking them down. She was emasculating them with words. She had one. It was one army. It's just her walking down with another general. Punking everyone down. And the only thing that comes to stop her is Sloth. The homunculi named Sloth.
Yeah, she was wild on them.
Yeah.
You have no control of your men. My men have been trained to survive for the fittest. Your men are a bunch of pansies. Like, essentially. But yeah. She was going crazy.
She was going crazy with it. She shows up. She's have this big old fight. I mean, we're going to get to the other part of that. But essentially, she's trying to take down Sloth herself, but who shows up as she's about to get taken down? None other than her brother. I was just about to say All Might. Alex Armstrong to show up, and it's a battle of muscles versus a sloth. And I don't like how this battle went, because Sloth suddenly was just like, I'm actually going to start moving fast right now. And we were like, what the fuck is going on here? So that battle...
It ain't going like, I'm the fastest, you know, I'm the fastest homunculus.
Actually, and I was like, damn. Well, fooled me, shit. But now it's the Armstrongs versus Sloth and homunculi. And also in this instance, like, more soldiers come down. It's like, we're supposed to be killing you. And she's essentially like, you will do as I say, because it's either us or them. And then the thousands of immortal bodies come in, the zombies show up. And essentially it's like, we all got to be on the same page now, unless everyone wants to die. They don't give a damn about you, clearly. Evil's continuing to fight back. They show up they go under the laboratory, Ed's team. Because I skipped a bunch of parts doing this.
The sloth battle is enjoyable, though. I don't know, you know, once again, it's you know, two big meaty men bumping meats. It's the fact that I like, though, the fact that he's fast, but it's not like he's under control. Like, he just moves really fast in one linear direction.
It's pretty.
But Armstrong got in his bag, though, and then he hit the you know, he saves his sister, gets his shoulder dislocated. But then
he gets to pop back in when he takes.
He uses Sloth to pop it back in, and then he just gets to, man, he gets to work. I was like, God damn! I said, Armstrong got some hands.
Yeah, and I knowing what happens up next is the best part. Like, I almost was like, all right, let's get this one more episode because of it, because I know the biggest team up ever in anime
happened. Literally, the biggest team up.
Up next, but we'll see it nonetheless.
It's gonna be us this summer. I need to get back to lifting heavy.
I'm not lifting heavy at all. I'm lifting, but I'm not lifting heavy. You're not. But I'm not lifting. I'm not lifting light either. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah, I mean, I figured that you're lifting at a moderate 10 to 12 reps.
Yeah, yeah.
8 to 10 reps.
Sometimes even more. Sometimes I'm really? 15. Yeah.
Ooh, you doing a 3x15?
Sometimes 4x15.
4, as I say, 4x15.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes.
Oh, you're really about to be looking like Armstrong.
I'm trying to like wear out my muscles for some reason. But again, a lot of things are going on in the lab. Eventually, May is trying to get to Central through the tunnels. They show up and they see all these mannequins. Envy takes full advantage of it. He absorbs a mannequin, knowing that they have a philosopher's stone in it, and he's back to his original form just like that. And he begins absorbing other mannequins. As May's doing her escape plan, she's jumping around. She's well trained. She is out here. She is dodging everything. She's dodging it all. Meanwhile, they're again in Laboratory 3 trying to escape all of these mannequins. It's Ed and the team of a monkey and Darius and Scar and
where the fuck I was. The fact that the monkey got to be Darius is crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. But they're the other. Is it the monkey? Is he there? Yeah, he's there. He's there with the other two, like chimeras. There we go. So they're trying to take him out. They're like, take him out by the legs, and eventually, none other than Roy Armstrong shows up. Roy Armstrong shows up, Flame Alchemist, and then out the other end, Envy shows up, and it goes down.
This is one of the greatest generational ass whoopings.
I was about to ask you, what are the greatest ass whoopings that we've ever seen in anime?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. There's so fucking many.
Like, clear.
Well, the best one ever, he's my man's, don't get me wrong, best one ever, though, is 18 and Vegeta.
Okay, I can see that.
That's the best ass whooping and humbling ass whooping.
Like, completely one sided. There's no, like, it's not a back and forth fight. It's just like complete, you know, domination pretty much from beginning to end. But 18 and Vegeta is pretty good. What else? Shit. There's a couple more. Let me Google it myself. Could I Google ass whoopings in anime?
Best one-sided anime fights.
Fights. Best one-sided fights in anime. Okay. I have Ranker says there's a top 15 that weren't even close. Madara lays waste to the Shinobi Alliance in Naruto.
Yes, that's definitely up there. How did you forget Levi this? And Beast Levi Titan. And
Beast Titan. Yep. Roy Mustang.
Oh, look who's number three.
The number right there. Gon Freecss powers up and wrecks Nefertiti in Hunter x Hunter.
Yeah, Natsu. He goes crazy when he awakens.
Natsu learns a lesson from Gildarts in Fairy Tail. I've never seen Fairy Tail.
One Punch Man in the Sea King.
Well, One Punch Man in most things, I would assume.
When Luffy beats up Bellamy.
Haven't reached up there yet. Is it in the Water Seven Saga?
It is. Ooh, actually, I think so.
We'll see. Hey, look at that. My goat is up next. Mirio Togata shocks class 1A with his power. Beats up 12 kids. Beats up a whole class by himself. SSG Goku versus Beerus. And then number 10, we'll just write it out. Yuna teaches Selim about classism in Black Clover. Okay. Listen. One side.
Oh, Sukuna versus Jogo.
Sukuna versus Jogo. There we go. No, that's a pretty good one. Sukuna versus Jogo. Gojo versus Jogo. All of it. Gojo versus Jogo is pretty underrated. That was a pretty sizable ass whooping.
That was.
With that said, there's a lot of history and story and kind of like feelings wrapped up in this ass whooping. Because it's Mustang for the first time encountering Envy and asking Envy, after 53 episodes up to this point, trying to find out. He's been asking other homunculi. He's been asking the Fuhrer himself. He's like, who was the person who killed Maze Hughes? And he finally comes over to Envy. Envy, taking advantage of Envy, who loves to get the credit for everything, who loves to be the source of people's despise. He gets there and he admits that he's the one who killed Hughes. And he makes fun of it. He says, imagine. He turns into Hughes's wife and was like, imagine the look on his face when his wife was the one who shot the gun and murdered him himself. And that only serves to ignite.
Now that's so wicked.
Yeah. It only serves to ignite the anger within Mustang himself. And he promises to pretty much take him out on his own. It is, you know, Envy decides he goes under a chase for Mustang. The other people kind of like continue to proceed within the underground, and Mustang essentially goes ham sandwich on him. But you see, the one part about it is that we see that the anger is kind of taking complete control of him. And it's Hawkeye who gets a little backstory of her own, because essentially she held the secrets to the flame alchemist herself. She had it on her back like she was America's star from fucking Yu-Gi-Oh! But she had a whole tattoo on her back.
A whole flame alchemy on her back, literally. Yeah.
And I like the part where she goes into the tunnel and then she meets up with Mustang, but it's not really Mustang, it's also Envy. Listen, Envy didn't have a game plan because he didn't
need Envy was flying by the seat of his pants.
He pretty much got his ass whooped continuously throughout the show by various people at various points through this entire thing. Kids, adults, old men, women, it didn't matter. Envy got his ass whooped by everyone. So
Envy became the confidence boost fight.
How did we feel about Mustang's rage and it taking real control of him, and actually it being Ed and none other, ironically itself, Scar. Scar is like, I've been controlled. I know what it is to be controlled completely by rage. And, you know, I'm not going to stop you from giving into revenge, but I'm just saying, it seems like it's fucking you up right now. You know what I'm saying? He says, but I still shudder to think what kind of a world a man captive by his own hate would create once he becomes his ruler. And then Mustang's like, oh my God, this nigga, he's barring me up.
I love this moment because throughout this series, Mustang has been the, you know, once again, he's been the leader. He has been the one that's like, listen, I'm going to stay cool under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make these, like, you know, be able to adjust last minute. I'm going to, like, have my head on straight. I'm going, you know, everything's meticulously planned and it's going to as planned. And he's, you know, people are looking to him to be this rock during these hard times. And he's showing up for, you know, his team in the last moment. Like, he is the true leader and best player on the team.
But,
and for him to have a moment, though, where he's like, I found my best friend's killer and I am going to, like, make you hurt and suffer and die this horrible death. And you kind of see him break, and you see him break that whole facade. Like, he lets the mask slip and he's like, all this rage and anger and hurt and pain and sadness that's inside of me right now. Mm-hmm. And he's letting it all out and letting it all consume him. You know, it brings you back to remembering, like, yo, he's human like the rest of us. And it also lets you know too about how much the people around him trust in his vision and trust in him, because they didn't want him to slip down that slope.
Absolutely. I mean,
shit, even Scar had grown to, like, grow a respect for him with the fact of, like, I don't want you to go down the same path I went down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ed even saying, like, you're going to be the Fuhrer one day. Like, you think I want to follow you if this is how you're going to be? Like, Hawkeye even being like, listen, bro, I'm going to shoot you right here and I'm going to off myself next, because, like, without you, there's nothing more. Like, you see how much love and respect, like, people really have for him. And I think in that moment, he also realizes, like, you know what? These aren't just people that I am, you know, put in a position to lead. Like, these are people that I truly love and care for also, and people that, like, really care and love for me.
And it's come a long way since the first episode. First couple episodes, he was pretty cold. He was pretty...
Oh, yeah, he was an asshole.
Yeah, he was pretty stringent on a lot of these things. But now you kind of see, like, again, you see the emotions. The killing of Hughes broke him kind of in a way, but that it kind of also... people kind of essentially asking, like, is he now after vengeance, or are we going to save this world? Like, what is it really that we're going for? What is it really that we're trying to accomplish? And will this cycle of hate continue if you become Fuhrer, if these are the feelings that you have within you, if these are the fiery, the inferno that's kind of like burning inside of you? Like, it's a shame. You want to become Fuhrer. You want to essentially make this country better. We all putting our lives on the line for you, and you've essentially kind of like lost yourself. It was a situation where, as much as people wanted to enjoy Envy's death, you couldn't fully enjoy it in the way you wanted to, because it was transforming Mustang into this kind of like very vengeful, dark human being. And he eventually...
I think like even Envy's own death is like, it was so fitting though, of like, you got your ass kicked by all these people. And did you see It Part 2?
No.
Ugh, fuck. All right. So essentially It Part 2, the way they figure out they defeat the clown is that they have to belittle him. They like, he's stronger because people fear him.
Right.
So the less fear you show him, the weaker that he is. So they start like belittling him and calling him names, and that's how he ends up dying.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like this same instance here of like, you know, Envy gets his ass kicked by so many people, but the one thing that really breaks him, hits him to the core, is Ed being like, you're just jealous of us. Like, you're just jealous of humans because we're able to feel and do these things and make this, and like, we're so well-rounded where you're not. Right. And like, that just breaks Envy, and Envy just rips, you know, his own Philosopher's Stone out, and, you know, and crushes it, and that's how he died. Like, I felt that that whole thing was so fitting and like just a perfect way to tie up that that loose end right there, like to complete that story for Mustang, but also for Envy.
It's a lot to kind of deal with. It's a very satisfying ending to, I mean, Envy is essentially like his own, as much as it's like Envy, there's a level of humiliation that he goes through that he can't necessarily deal with, is why he ends up offing himself. But it's one of the most notable moments from this series. Essentially, like, he got his, and now it's back to focusing on the plan, but also the whole city, everyone is starting to, like, kind of retaliate. And the episode ends, in terms of episodes, it ends with pretty much continuing the fight with the Armstrongs versus Sloth and the mannequin. And the army's being taken over by the Briggs army, and fucking what's her name?
Uzumi pulls up.
Yeah, Uzumi pulls up and essentially is like, who
could such a great moment
dig a thing underground? And it's like, I'm more than a housewife.
I used to be a housewife, and I was in the disguise of a housewife, but me, I am now an alchemist.
Right, essentially. And the final bit of the episode is eventually Hohenheim reaches face to face with Father. And yeah, we're starting the end game of this show. I mean, this is
that was a good little moment between Father and Hohenheim.
Yeah, we're starting the final stretch of these episodes, kind of capping off this story, and it's been great thus far.
Oh, real quick question. Okay, I'm trying to remember this right. When Ed first goes to the village where Hohenheim's at, mm-hmm. right before they fight Pride in them. does the villager call Hohenheim Ho? He said, "Hey Ho, your son is here." That was hilarious.
I guess so. I guess that's his name for short.
Hey, listen, the big Ho, man.
Isn't his name Von Hohenheim though?
Like, Von Hohenheim.
Just call him King Von. I don't know. Either way, amazing, great stuff. We're heading towards the final 10 episodes of this. It's going to be a doozy. I look forward to talking to. I look forward to finishing this next week. We can finally just like wrap this thing up. Not like wrap it up like I'm finally thinking to finish it, but like, there's so many times that we're watching these episodes and we're like, we want to continue because the story is going so much better. But then we can't, because it's like, if we go too far, we're going to end up like confusing ourselves. But now we can finally finish this entire ordeal, and we can talk about it in full and kind of the story that it is and where it kind of holds and how much we love this story. So thank you guys for tuning in. Of course, 6 years of The Lookout. We are here.
6 years.
And
we have a special message from a really good friend, Mr. Rob, aka Ugly New York himself.
Oh, what did he
say? He wants the fans to know that he says hello and to pass him a bev.
That's how I know it's Rob and not Envy or any other homunculi. shout out to Rob. He may be, you know, he'll probably be on later this year when we do One Piece, because he's been binging One Piece. So we're going to talk about it with him. So make sure to tune in for that. Make sure to stay tuned to The Lookout. We got a lot of great stuff coming up. And make sure you tune into the next episode. We're going to finish Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. This is the second series that I ever watched, the second anime series that I ever watched. I look forward to talking about it in full and kind of like getting everyone's stories kind of wrapped up. And see, you know, a great ending to a great anime. So until then, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.